Hi, I'm Vernon Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Marta Fabrikowski, OD, FAAO, of the Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital in New York City. Where did you grow up?
In Canada, in Winnipeg, north of North Dakota. Far, far north.
Being in New York, do you miss the winters?
My patients always say, you know, oh, it's so cold today, and I always tell them I'm from Winnipeg, and so the winters here are basically subtropical by my standards. Positive way of looking at things. and then I spent some time in Ohio. That's where I went to optometry school, and so that's sort of part two of growing up.
What did your parents do?
My parents are both professors. My father was a number theory and calculus professor. I still don't know what that means. and he was the director of the United States Math Olympiad team. And then my mother is a early childhood education professor.
Now, I read that you majored in art history as an undergrad at Fringe. How did you get from art history to ocular diseases?
Well, I always knew I wanted to go into healthcare or into medicine. I just didn't love the idea of biology or physics or, you know, molecules and things that I felt that I would not make too much use of later. So I wanted to obviously, you know, take and understand and, you know, really know all the science that I needed to, but sort of without the extra sort of bells and whistles. What I preferred to do was to take classes in something that I could use conversationally with patients and in life and in hobbies. You know, because examining a patient, it, you know, of course you use basic science and you use the, you know, molecular theory and sometimes like compound drops and things like that. But you also are, you know, a person and you talk to them about what they like to do and, you know, where they like to go. And I knew I'd be in a major metropolitan area and I really love art history. So it was a great merger. It was a life choice.
If you could have any piece of art in your house, what would it be?
Oh, do I have a budget?
No, let's say not.
if no budget, it would be a JMW Turner. He is a British painter who's very famous for the burning of the Houses of Parliament. And he painted this painting called The Slave Ship, which is just a very turbulent but beautiful sort of backlit ocean. And it's a very pensive painting, all sort of, you know, classical, sort of impressionist, more classical than impressionist, I suppose. And it leaves a lot to the imagination. So it's a difficult scene, but also a beautiful scene.
What is it about research that keeps you engaged?
I think everyone has sort of a different approach to seeing patients and to medicine. And my thinking is the best approach to patients for me is the best educated and most up-to-date on current strategies and sort of, I guess, standard of care. And so in practicing, it's easy to keep doing and keep treating the way you know. And it's, I think, really important to look and see what other people are doing and how else to improve it. So I think staying current in research and not only discovering things for yourself, but keeping up to date on other research can really keep you the most up to date for yourself and for your treatment of patients. But also because patients, you know, in this world are also very well versed in their care. They are sort of advocates for themselves, and so it's important to know what they're reading and, you know, what they're saying so you can explain things they have seen or seen glimpses of or heard their friends have had. So I think staying current is vital for, you know, the best standard of care.
Why ocular disease, then?
I interact with people across the whole spectrum of healthcare. You know, rheumatologists, you know, internists, oncologists. We send cultures to labs, so I speak, you know, often with lab technicians or, you know, PhDs who are doing research on some, you know, bacteria we happen to, you know, send a sample of, which, you know, happened a few months ago. So it's really fascinating because it becomes a much more sort of multifaceted approach, which is generally, you know, where eye care is trending. And, you know, and all the optometrists are sort of networking with, you know, primary care doctors. But you know, sort of when you're dealing with disease, that sort of is your focus, is sort of really talking to other, you know, practitioners and sort of getting a whole holistic version of the person.
Now, you work at MEATH, which is the Manhattan Eye, Ears, Nose, and Throat Hospital. In Manhattan. Why a hospital practice instead of a private practice or going into industry?
Well, the hospital where I work is nonprofit, so that is vital. So I always wanted to make an impact on healthcare in a way that enabled me to see patients sort of in all walks of life. So, you know, whether they're Medicaid, whether they're, you know, uninsured, whether they're, you know, an Upper East Sider and they have all the, a lot of insurance, you know, and sort of being in a nonprofit allows me to sort of see patients among, you know, over the whole spectrum. And also a lot of sort of practitioners are salaried in the hospital. So there's less sort of incentive for fee-for-service. You know, if you are in a private practice, you basically, you know, you take home what you bring in, so to speak. And the pressure is not so great in a nonprofit, you know. Our main focus is to see patients and treat them well and, you know, have positive outcomes, which is sort of everyone's goal, but that's sort of the bread and butter of our practice here. So being in a hospital, you know, allows me to focus on, you know, really patient care. I don't need to think about billing. I don't need to think about marketing. I don't need to think about my schedule. I don't need to think, you know, things are sort of all that we have departments that take care of all that, you know, risk management. So I really just am able to see my patients and then go home when I'm on call. I take on call and I speak with the patients, but the other sort of day-to-day things, you know, I don't need to worry about. I don't need to worry about overseeing an office manager. I, you know, sort of just come in and do what I'm able to focus on. Also, working in a hospital, I work with other specialists. So there's a cornea specialist here. We have uveitis. We have medical retina. We have neuro-ophthalmology. We have surgical retina. We have glaucoma, you know, so being in a sort of major hospital system allows me direct interaction with all those sort of branches, you know, on a daily basis.
What's something your colleagues don't know about you?
Probably how much I like to cook, and how much I like to cook for a long time. So those, you know, recipes that say 6+ hours of preparation sometimes or 3+ hours of marinating plus 12 hours in a cooker or whatever, you know, I like to dive into those and, you know, mix my own spice concoctions. And so it's sort of a labor of love. And I'm fairly efficient in the office, so it's sort of an opposite sort of, I guess, hobby. It's something that's sort of low and slow.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Hopefully with my optometry school debt paid off. And I hope to make a large impact on nonprofit healthcare in optometry and ophthalmology, sort of in the eye world. You know, I'm seeing a patient at a time here, and you know, I'm talking to them about their insurance, you know, woes and their, you know, medications that aren't covered and how long it took them to see me, you know, versus you know, seeing their internist or getting a referral or getting, you know, any of those. And so I listen to these day in, day out, and I'm just thinking, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could somehow make larger decisions, not the decision right there, one patient at a time, to call their insurance company and talk with them, which I'm happy to do. What if there was a way where I could call an insurance company and help make a decision that would help 100 patients or 1,000 patients? So I hope that my impact in 10 years on patients, I'm sort of making larger brush strokes, a larger sort of impact on healthcare.
Well, that brings me to my next question. I know your husband has a Harvard MBA. Why an MBA from Yale?
He went to Harvard undergrad. He had an MBA from Northwestern.
Oh, okay.
Which
but why
is fantastic.
Why do you want to get your MBA?
Well, in order to functionally really, you know, lead or make an impact in business, you have to understand business. And understand operations and understand the funding and the structure of different companies and what it means to be a 501c3 versus, you know, B Corp versus a C Corp, you know, and on and on and on. And I don't know that well enough to really make use of that knowledge and to help make decisions. You know, I don't know how to make an operating room more efficient at the moment. You know, I can see problems and I can see maybe this is a solution, but are there, you know, more concrete ways of reaching that? You know, I don't know, you know, I can identify, you know, trends of things that seem to work, but how does that, you know, impact healthcare and the business of healthcare and the business of insurance? And so to really move forward with being able to make a larger impact on the healthcare industry, I think I need a much greater understanding. And the reason I chose Yale as a program was originally the Yale MBA for executives was just healthcare. For, you know, many, many years, it was just considered a healthcare MBA. So their alumni are mostly healthcare executives. And so their alumni network of practitioners and leaders in insurance and in pharma and, you know, all these sort of, you know, satellite industries to healthcare is huge. And it's, you know, very, it's close to New York City. It's trainable. by train. Because it's an executive MBA, it does allow me to stay at the hospital full time, which is very important for me to not take time off to do this MBA and to be able to stay in my current job so that I can innovate while here, you know. So, you know, if first quarter, first semester passes and I have now learned different algorithms for, you know, assessing the efficiency of, you know, office work or the OR or something like that, I can directly apply it or, you know, see how I can, you know, innovate while here. And healthcare is such a quickly, you know, fluctuating and growing sort of behemoth that being at work while learning is sort of is integral. And so basically, to do that, I was limited in number of programs to do.
What would you advise a young OD who wants to follow your path?
My path is sort of evolving, as you know, as many of ours are. So, you know, I don't, if their path is to work in a hospital and to work in ocular disease, I would say, you know, keep your interests in doing, you know, a residency. I became a fellow of the American Academy of Ophthalmology, you know, the year I finished residency, which is extraordinarily helpful for networking and for finding new practitioners, you know, where you are and for learning. So I highly recommend becoming a fellow of the Academy. And residency. If it's, you know, more business-oriented things or more healthcare, you know, on the whole things, I mean, not just an MBA, but there's other graduate programs, Masters of Science, you know, Masters of Public Health, and other programs that will sort of get you in that arena also. So it's sort of, you know, a potential multifaceted approach, depending on what they'd like.
What's your guilty pleasure food?
Well, I will say actually what I feel guilty about is that I don't ever feel guilty about eating something. And that is probably not a good quality. I won't say ever. I mean, I'm sure there's times where I have, you know, really had too much of something. But for the most part, I think it was my mom that taught us that, you know, whatever you feel like eating is probably what your body needs. And so just go ahead and eat it. And I eat very well, sort of, or very healthy, you know, in moderation, most things. So I don't ever really feel too badly about things. But maybe as I get older and my metabolism slows down, I'll have a different view and I'll start feeling a little more remorseful.
What's something about optometry that you'd like to change?
Can I say tuition costs?
Yes, you
Well, I think that applies to, you know, I don't think it's just optometry. I think that's sort of, you know, the alarm bells that are going off right now for, you know, for med school and undergraduate studies and everything else, you know, it's really up there. Something I could change about optometry school. I had such a great experience at Ohio State. They really, they integrated us with pharmacy. They had different, you know, mixers and things with other, you know, schools, which I think is maybe very important for any professional school is to be networked with other sort of healthcare providers. So maybe having, you know, more sort of interaction with other sort of healthcare subspecialties, you know, while in school, sort of build those foundational relationships. And also to know, you know, really, you know, what they do. For example, you know, we work really closely with ENT here, and so we have patients who complain of eye pain or sort of generalized pain in the area of the eye that ends up being, you know, a sinus problem. And that's something I, you know, recently learned about. And, you know, if you speak more with ENT, I was like, oh, you know, that makes sense, you know. And so we co-manage back and forth sometimes. And so I think more interaction with, you know, sort of the whole body, sort of other subspecialties would be helpful.
Do you have any regrets?
Like being 13 and not making the basketball team because I had no hand-eye coordination? I probably would say, I think actually it would be never really doing a sport or being a part of like even like a dance team or anything like that. I think that's really character building and it shows you, you know, it gives you the discipline to be athletic or sort of keep that in your life or to go to the gym or to, you know, sort of keep that up in adulthood. And I think if you enjoy that in childhood, you're more apt to do it later as an adult. And I never really did that, which may also explain why I don't do any of that now. So I would say sort of completely obviating athletics would be something that I might have changed.
Okay, our last question, and we inflict this one on everybody. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
I think accepting this job. So let me explain. So I was in a fantastic ocular disease residency that we saw everything. From soup to nuts, we treated patients, you know, multiple diagnoses, complicated diagnoses, incorrect diagnoses. It was absolutely fantastic. And there was one glaucoma specialist there who it was brilliant and is brilliant. And he was just sort of the most well-known. He was the quintessential New Yorker. He knew everybody. He knew everything type person. And really intimidating. And so it was near the end of the residency, and we were all looking for jobs and sort of scrambling. And, you know, it's competitive everywhere, you know, to find a good job, especially hospital-based in an ocular disease. So I remember speaking to him once about these job interviews I was going with, and he said, "Don't go there, don't go there, don't go there, don't even go interview there." And I said, "Well, these are my only options, so it's do that or, you know, I don't even know." And he said, "Well, let me make a few calls." So he called me one day, and he said, "I have the job for you." And I said, "Oh, he's somebody that you would, you know, take, you know, his word for no matter what." So he said, "I have a job for you. This is, you know, where you'll go at this time. This will be sort of your interview, and tell them you want the job." And that was the end of the conversation. So I said, "Okay, well, you know, I don't have, you know, anything else going on. Apparently these are not good options that I have myself." So I came here to the hospital here, and the office was not built. I was given a hard hat, and they walked me through this area that just had, you know, beams and, you know, plywood and 2x4s. And they said, "You know what, we're building a practice here. It's going to be, you know, ophthalmology and optometry, and this is going to be a fantastic tertiary care center, and you should come here." And I said yes, without seeing a practice, with only meeting a few of the doctors, and I really took a leap of faith. I had a really good feeling about it, and I'm a very risk-averse type person, but it was the first time I really took a leap of faith, and it worked out. Still here. My first
wow.
and only job.
Talk about getting in at literally the bare floor level.
Yep, it was extraordinary, so that was quite a decision.
Well, Marta, that is all the questions I have for you. I'm so glad I got to talk to you today.
It's been fun. Thank you. Thank you for the call.